You are listening to Raising the Bar with Konacek and Dillon. Join us for a lively and informative conversation on hot legal topics. Call or email us with your legal questions at raisingthebar@wgnradio.com.
Welcome to Raising the Bar. I am David Hochberg, and in studio with me is Tom Dillon, one of the partners at Konacek and Dillon in Geneva, Illinois. I just talked to a guy today in Geneva, homeowner in Geneva, and we were talking about how beautiful downtown was with the water going through, and he enjoys it. He said, great place to raise a family.
Nice place to work as well.
Nice place to be. So Konacek Dillon, Tom Dillon, partner in the law firm of Konacek and Dillon. If you want to reach them, it's 630-262-9655. I gave out an internet phone number unintentionally last week. I apologize for that. 630-262-9655 if you want to reach them. And the great attorneys at the law offices of Konacek and Dillon in Geneva, call that number. Today's show, we're going to be talking about Residents' Rights Month. And residents' rights. We're going to be talking about that. I didn't even know, you know, there's a day and a month and a week for everything. And I just want to know when the week of David is going to come so I could be saluted in the proper way. I was just thinking out loud here.
That day is coming. Hallmark is planning it.
I'm sure that day's coming. Yeah. One way or the other. 312.
They can't sell cards any other way.
They can't sell them fast enough. 312-521-8600. 312-521-8600 is the phone. And the text line. Let's light them up, folks. We've had a couple of great shows in the past couple, 3-4 weeks. You go to WGN.FM to get podcasts of those previously recorded shows. And you could send your emails to raisingthebar@wgnradio.com. Raisingthebar@wgnradio.com. So what do you want to cover today, Mr. Dillon?
October. Mm-hmm. We're on the last day of the month. We're going to talk about October.
Happy Halloween, by the way.
Thank you. Happy. As you can tell, I'm in a costume. I can't really disclose what my costume is.
You're dressed as an attorney.
Sorry. Sort of. I was going to say something that really shouldn't be said on the radio.
A firefighter.
October is National Nursing Home Residents' Rights Month.
What does that mean?
That means there is a focus on the rights of people who live in long-term care facilities, not just nursing homes, but assisted living facilities and other types of residential housing for older folks. And there are some important rights.
I mean, who would ever? I mean, seriously, you would never. I would never even think of that. Not having any one of my family members in a nursing home. You would never think that there would be a day or a month dedicated to people that live in nursing homes. And how did that come about?
This was started by an organization, a nonprofit called the Consumer Voice, and it's a really good organization. We donate to it. They focus on advocacy for residents of nursing homes, and they're very good at promoting the interests of nursing home residents, but also educating not only caregivers, but others on the rights and the responsibilities of residents. And the responsibilities are important as well as the rights. But the rights of the residents are what we're going to talk about today. There are some important ones. And then what happens if, for some reason, those rights are not honored, not by the nursing home or by someone else? What happens when they're violated?
Would that also include somebody that's living in their home for the past 30 years and now have somebody that comes in to take care of them or live with them part-time and, you know, cook food for them and bathe them and care for them in exchange for housing or something like that?
Probably not. There are different kinds of rights that those people might have under Illinois law. But I'm not the kind of attorney that handles that. Our firm does something different. So there are different bundle of rights there.
So this is a national Residents' Rights Month. It's not just in Illinois.
Not just in Illinois.
I had no idea. Okay.
Well, they're advocates, but they advocate to people within the industry primarily.
All right. Now we're going to blow it out of the industry to let people know. Started by Consumer Voice, nonprofit organization for advocacy for rights of seniors and residents. And let's get right into it. What are residents' rights? You know, you think you check into a nursing home, you check into an assisted living facility, you pay your bills, and away you go. But what are the rights that people have? I've got my constitutional rights. You have your constitutional rights. Everybody listening has their constitutional rights. What rights do people that live, what specific and additional rights, if you will, do the people that live in these type of facilities have?
Well, you said something really important, David, and I know that can be considered rare with you.
But it is. I'm shocked that you would recognize it. Go ahead.
No.
Thank you.
You made a great point about your constitutional rights. You don't check your constitutional rights at the door when you're admitted to a nursing home or an assisted living facility. But there's an important limitation to constitutional rights. Those rights protect us from the government. They don't protect us from private citizens or private businesses. Those are limitations on what the government can do to us. Nursing home residents all maintain their constitutional rights, although there are some limitations when they can't vote because they don't have the cognitive abilities they need to vote. There are limitations that they may not be able to exercise that particular right, but otherwise their constitutional rights remain intact. If they have cognitive abilities, they are entitled to vote, and the nursing home cannot restrict their right to vote.
Does the nursing home have to provide transportation to take their residents to a polling facility?
They will either set up a polling place and do balloting at the nursing home, or they will transport people to the local ballot box.
So that's one of the rights.
That's exactly right. That's one of the bundle of rights that they maintain.
Wow.
They have all of the rights of citizenship of the United States.
Interesting. I had no idea. So what other... Okay, so we got voting. Obviously, that's a hot topic. We've got 6 more days of these ridiculous commercials. And, you know, hopefully people will go and vote, and they're expecting low voter turnout. And hopefully the seniors living in these senior facilities will be motivated enough to at least get off their whatever, you know, rear ends to go vote. But what other rights other than voting rights do they have that people wouldn't be aware of?
Well, as a good example with the right to practice the religion that they want to practice. So the nursing homes will set up religious services or assist in transporting people to religious places of worship, or they'll bring people in. So again, the rights of citizenship, they get to keep all of those rights, and the good nursing homes, the best nursing homes, do everything they can to facilitate the practice of those rights. The next one down is a really important one. It might be the most important one of all. It's a huge umbrella of rights. It's the right to dignity.
What does that mean? I know what dignity means, but what is a right to dignity? What is that in the legal scholar, you know, way of looking at it? What does that mean? 312-521-8600 is the phone and text line if you have any questions about the month of October's residents' rights. We're talking about that right now with Tom Dillon of Conosecond Dillon. You could give their law offices a call at 630-262-9655. Or you could send them an email, raisingthebar@wgnradio.com. Raisingthebar@wgnradio.com is the email address. Or you could check out their website, ConosecDillonLaw.com. That's ConosecDillonLaw.com. So what is the legal, you know, legalese, if you will, of what we were talking about previously?
The legal definition of dignity is not as instructive as an example of what dignity is. A dignity situation arises in a nursing home if a resident is left sitting in a diaper, in their own waste, their own urine, for hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens. That's a dignity issue. Dignity problems occur when a resident is walking naked down a hallway and no one is doing anything to stop it or to help the person put on clothing.
And the senior's not doing that to be off the wall. It's just they forget to put their pants on. And again, I'm not even trying to be funny. It's, you know, you get to a certain age, I forget my keys someplace. I don't know where I put my cars. You know, you get up, you start forgetting more things. It's why we have Alzheimer's disease. That's why we have other disease. And seniors can get, you know, forget about. Listen, my grandfather, may rest in peace, I remember going to his house in Florida, and he was living alone. All of a sudden, he dropped pants and tucked in his undershirt and his underwear. And I'm just like, okay, you know, have at it, whatever. I just completely blew my mind. I wasn't ready for it. But seniors sometimes forget things, and walking around without their pants on could be something. And like you said, if nobody says anything, what rights does that person or their family, because the person walking around without their pants on probably doesn't know they're walking around without their pants on. But if a family member comes or is sitting there visiting somebody else and sees Joe in room 204, buck naked, going down the hall, should they be contacting the family of Joe and say, hey, something's going on, man. Joe's walking around naked for 30 minutes. How do you address that?
Well, first off, you're exactly right that the resident isn't doing it on purpose more often than not. It's a byproduct of their dementia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a byproduct of other cognitive difficulties. My father died about a year and a half ago, and it was 2 years ago this week that he really started to get sick. And what would happen with him is he would become delirious. He'd have what they call altered mental status. And that was as a result of infections. And what it prompted him to do, unintentionally, was start to remove his clothes.
Was he living alone or was he living in one of these facilities?
Well, I was getting him moved into a facility.
Okay.
In fact, he was touring the facility the day this happened.
Really?
And he starts just taking off his clothes in the middle of the lobby of the sheltered care facility. So it happens, and it's not something that they do intentionally. What happens, though, is it's upsetting to other residents. It's upsetting to the person it's happening to, but they don't usually know what's happening. And the dignity aspect of things is focusing on that person as a human being. And I think that the best way to look at the dignity is to say, would I want to swap places with that person and go through what they're going through now or do what they're doing right now? And if the answer to the question is no, there might be a dignity issue there.
Do you do training for hospitals and nursing homes, or do you don't do that sort of work?
I don't know. There are professionals that handle that kind of stuff, not
so,
me.
So when you come knocking, you're going to be like, hey, where's your manual and where's your training and all that stuff? That
right.
That's kind of what you would go through, I would assume, when you go, if somebody calls you and say, hey, Tom, I was just visiting my mom and I saw this guy down the hall and I'm going to give the Smiths your phone number because this guy was tolling around there for 15 minutes and nobody did anything. What happens from that moment forward if the Smiths call you or the Joneses or the Johnsons, whatever? I don't want to be specific here and get emails from the Smiths, okay? But in this situation, what happens? Where do you go from there?
The first thing we look at is we try to figure out what happened and what have they done so far to try to fix it. There are several avenues that we suggest that residents and their families take first to try to address problems. First and foremost, talk to people at the facility, at the nursing home. If they have a good relationship with them and it's a good facility, they'll take care of it.
This is the family.
Correct.
Okay.
This is a family.
Or they're not involved yet.
Or it could be the resident talking on behalf of another resident.
Okay.
If sometimes these things happen at night and, you know, the staffing is a little less at nighttime than it is during the daytime. The director of nursing is typically not there overnight. The administrator's not there overnight. So management may not know that this is happening.
Or could it be maybe I'm visiting my mom and I see Mr. Smith, you know, walking around. Should I be the one going to the head of nursing to make a complaint? Because I don't want it happening to my mom.
Well, certainly. And we have a law in Illinois. It's called the Nursing Home Care Act. And when the law was passed years ago, its promoters talked about the idea that the law was to help other people become watchdogs of people in nursing homes.
Really?
That's an important phrase, the watchdog. So when you walk into a nursing home to visit a friend or a family member, be a watchdog for other people. Watch how others are being treated. Watch to see if someone is being hurt. And if they can't speak up for themselves, then go to the director of nursing or go to the administrator and talk to somebody and say, hey, you may think it's none of my business, but I see that somebody down the hall is getting hurt.
And that person who is talking on behalf of the person who's walking around naked is protected by the law.
That's right.
Because it's in the law that says you have a duty to do this.
That's right. That's right. And a good nursing home, their staff will take care of those problems. They'll address them and they'll take them seriously and they'll want to get it fixed. But if the nursing home doesn't take care of the problem, doesn't take it seriously, the next step is to talk to the ombudsman.
And who is that?
The ombudsman is an advocate. Every state is required under federal law to have this ombudsman. It's an advocate who will work on behalf of nursing home residents to try to fix those kinds of problems without having to go to court, without having to file a lawsuit.
Are they located at the facility?
They're not located at the facility. They don't have one per nursing home. We have 800 nursing homes in Illinois, and we don't have the money for that many ombudsmen. Well,
there's a job creation program when you become governor next in 4 years.
But oh, go good ahead. Lord, no.
Yeah, okay. So.
No. Please, no.
Every nursing home should have an ombudsman. You have to spell it first in order to get the job, but in order to qualify, you have to learn how to spell it, and we just created about 600 more jobs. Okay, so.
Right, so if the nursing home doesn't fix it, go to the ombudsman, tell the ombudsman what's happening,
mm-hmm.
and oftentimes they can get it fixed pretty quickly.
And that's done at the corporate level?
Their work is done. They'll talk directly to the facility management. They'll talk to the director of nursing. They'll talk to the administrator. They'll go to the facility.
I'm sorry. I misstated the question. Does the ombudsman work for ABC Nursing Home?
No. For the state.
It's a state. Okay.
Yeah.
So Department of Aging. That's what I was going to get to. So you would contact the Department of Aging at the state of Illinois. Department of Aging, and there's an ombudsman, I guess, per district?
It's regional, yeah.
It's a regional district. Okay, so it's a regional position. You would file your complaint there. It would be a good idea for the person to probably go to the facility first or jump right over to the ombudsman.
I suggest going to the facility first and keep notes about what you say, keep notes about what the facility says
back.
They're documenting, so you might as well, too. Don't let their version be the only version.
Mm-hmm.
Document it, but a good nursing home will take care of the problem. They will address it right away.
All right, so let's talk about other things because we only have an hour show here, but that was great. I had no idea what was going on and the rights of the seniors and the law takes into account the people that are visiting people in nursing homes. I mean, you have an obligation under the law to keep your eyes open and your ears open to make sure everything's being taken care of. 312-521-8600 is the phone and the text line. If you have any questions about nursing home rights, about residents' rights that live in nursing homes or assisted living facilities, give us a call or send us a text, 312-521-8600. 312-521-8600. Go to the website, ConasecDillonLaw.com. Let's talk about abuse, okay? Your commercials run weekly on WGN, on WGN.FM all the time about nursing home, nursing care, elderly care abuse. Is that still prevalent today? And if so, why do you think it's still prevalent?
The answer is yes. Abuse is considered to be an intentional harm. And it occurs. If I'm looking at things with rose-colored glasses, I like to say that it's not prevalent, but it occurs.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to think that the people who work in nursing homes are not intentionally abusive or intentionally mean. But that doesn't mean that residents don't get neglected. And neglect happens mainly because there aren't enough people working in the nursing homes.
Right.
The nursing homes cut their staff.
It's P&L, profit and loss, right? You got to make a profit.
It is. And so they go to minimum staffing as often as they can, and they say, hey, according to the regulations, we've got enough people working here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, according to Mrs. Jones down the hall or Mr. Smith on the other side of the hall, they're saying that they've been ringing their call bell for 3 hours wanting to get up to go to the bathroom and no one's been there to help them yet.
Right.
So don't tell me you've got enough staff. So neglect happens, and neglect happens all day, every day in some nursing homes. And it happens at least occasionally, even in the best nursing homes.
So how do you document that? If you're in a nursing home listening now, or if you have a loved one in a nursing home listening now, how do you go about documenting abuse? And again, what's your definition under the law of abuse?
Abuse is intentional harm. So I want to tell you, David, you just hit on one of the greatest challenges that we have as lawyers suing nursing homes. And it's not just me. It's not just our firm. It's other lawyers who represent the elderly. We've got a challenge in that our firsthand witness to the event oftentimes can't testify because they have dementia
mm-hmm.
or because they simply can't speak.
Right.
Some because they don't speak English.
Right.
So we have a challenge there. Other times we're dealing with residents who are older, and although they may have been able to recall, observe, and perceive the events as they were happening, they lose that ability in 6 months or a year, or they die, and they're just not available as witnesses. Meanwhile, the defense has all their nurses, all their CNA, their administrators.
We didn't do that.
And they're all writing things down all the time.
Right.
So what I like to tell people is don't let the nursing home's word be the only word on the issue. If your resident is cognizant, if the resident is your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, so on, take notes for them. If they can't write down, if they can write down, give them a pad of paper. Let them write things down. When they hit their call button, when they asked for help, who sassed off to them, who didn't give them help when they asked for help. The place only gets better when the problems are pointed out to management and management's given the opportunity to fix it. Doesn't mean they'll always fix it, but give them that opportunity. Take notes.
Can you put cameras in the room of a nursing home patient because it's not your facility? So can you bring in security cameras because you're renting a room?
You are very good at segueing, David, I got to tell you. So when we have National David Day week or month, whatever it is, everybody's going to be riding on segues. Your question's a great question because the next one down on the list of rights is the right to privacy. And Lisa Madigan proposed recently that there be some type of provision that would allow cameras in nursing home rooms. There are competing rights. Some nursing homes have four residents per room. Do you have four different sets of cameras? Can one camera face only one resident, not the other residents? How do you have the camera to protect one resident and not violate the other resident's right to privacy? And that's where the problem comes in, is you have competing rights.
That's a problem.
That is a problem, and it hasn't been fixed yet. And I don't know that there is a simple solution to that problem.
Is there any way to put, I guess, would it be against the law then to put a camera in a room and use it? It would be inadmissible in court, because that would the nursing home came back, hypothetical situation. I got a parent, a spouse, whatever, and I think they're being neglected. I pop up a couple of, I got a buddy of mine that works at a security firm. I got a buddy of mine that's, you know, worked security at state police. I pop up a couple of pen cap cameras in there, but it's only concentrated on her bed. And I bring that and show that the attendant slapped her around, showed her pressing the button for 3 hours, sitting in her feces. Even though it's, you know, I put them in there, is that admissible in the court?
Admissible in a civil case is going to be different than admissible in a criminal case. But if I'm representing someone and I've got video that shows the harm being done, I'm darn well going to try to get that admitted into court. It's certainly relevant to the claim that the resident was neglected and abused. The question is, did the person who put the cameras in violate the law, and would that be an independent reason why the evidence should be admissible? If you've got video that shows somebody being punched, I think a judge is going to let it in.
Yeah.
I hope they do.
Well, yeah, they should, or that judge should be punched. Yep. So let me ask you a question. What's the definition of mental abuse?
Well, mental abuse can be... just speaking disrespectfully, it can be calling people names, disparaging names. It could be giving racially or religiously disparaging names. Mental abuse can be just ignoring a person. Whenever the resident calls the caregiver's name, a CNA's name or a nurse's name, and they completely ignore them, that's a form of mental abuse.
What's a CNA?
CNA is a certified nurse assistant. Their job is to help the nurses by getting residents up and out of bed, getting them into wheelchairs, getting them back into bed, helping them eat, doing things day-to-day like bathing, which they don't do day-to-day, but once a week usually, maybe twice a week. They help with what are called activities of daily living. And sometimes that's helping them go to the bathroom. Sometimes that's helping them handle personal hygiene matters.
Is there a ratio of CNAs to... trained nurses, or is in the state of Illinois, or no?
And it varies by facility. And nursing homes, some of them, the better nursing homes have more CNAs. Okay. Mm-hmm. The saying is something like many hands make light work. That's very true in a nursing home or an assisted living facility, where you've got a lot of people to help get residents up and out of bed and help them go to the bathroom. People don't have to wait as long for that call button to be answered because there are more people there. The best nursing home I ever saw in that regard was one that had all the CNAs hanging out by the front desk. It looked like they were just socializing. But what they were doing is they were there for rotation. As soon as a call button went,
boom,
one would go right down the hall. They'd look up, see what room it was in, and head down the hall immediately. And no one ever had to wait more than 30 seconds for a call light to be answered.
Abuse and neglect of money. Would that be somebody getting their stuff stolen?
Yes. Unfortunately, that's rare in Illinois.
It is.
The reasons why it's rare, though, tend to be that most people who go into the nursing homes don't have a lot of money. So they're there on Medicaid or they're on a Medicare stay, and so the nursing home is not holding their money. But similar to lawyers who have trust accounts, nursing homes have resident trust accounts, and they are fiduciaries just as lawyers are with regard to the money and property that they hold. I think I've only had one instance where there was a nursing home that was accused of mishandling funds, and they fired the nurse who did it and made things right.
All right, 312-521-8600 is the phone and text line. Listening to Raising the Bar, sponsored by the law offices of Conasec Dillon. You can go to Conasec and Dillon by visiting their website, ConasecDillonLaw.com. That's ConasecDillonLaw.com. You could call their offices, the Conasec and Dillon Law offices, at 630-262-9655. They're located in Geneva on West State Street in the beautiful town of Geneva. 630-262-9655. You could download a podcast of this radio show In about an hour after the show, Brian Jones will be up and running, have this thing ready and set for you to download. And you could download previous shows by going to WGN.FM, typing in Raising the Bar, and it'll take you right to the web page that has all the previous podcasts. I want to tell you, Tom, as one of the owners of the company, the attorneys that you've been sending in the past 2 weeks have been outstanding. Amanda, Tom, I think, and Mike. Mike Hartigan?
Hannigan.
Hannigan. Amanda was great last week. Mike did it twice, and Tom, our Notre Dame fan, was a little depressed the following week. That's why he had to have Amanda step in for him, because still getting over the loss, that crushing loss from Florida State. Sorry, Tom.
He's still getting therapy.
I'm sure he is. 312-521, liquid therapy. 312-521-8600 is the phone and text line. Let's keep on with the abuse. Abuse from restraints, free from restraining people. Is that common, where nursing homes would say, you know what, I don't trust I don't understand that. I understand what restraints are, but what is abuse of restraints? Do people just automatically put people in restraints because they don't want to deal with them, or how does that work?
There are a couple of kinds of restraints. First, there's the physical restraints, where mm-hmm. people are literally being strapped down or tied down. I think if you saw the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, you'd see some examples of physical restraints. Those are exceedingly rare. Illinois is a no-restraint state, and that is that restraint use is supposed to be so severely limited, but that doesn't mean that they're prohibited. Sometimes it's what's appropriate for the safety of the resident, and if the resident is cognitively intact, the resident can consent to a restraint. And restraints, they're in degrees. They're not every restraint has a resident tied down at all four extremities. There are restraints that are very minimal that might just slow somebody down if they were trying to get up, and it'll prevent them from standing abruptly and quickly and maybe falling. But restraints can be consented to by family, by the power of attorney or a guardian, and they can be ordered by a physician. That's one type of restraint, the physical restraint. The other type of restraint is much more challenging to figure out, and that's what we call chemical restraints. Chemical restraints is medicating people to the point where they can't move. Yeah. So, in college, they call it drinking. In nursing homes, they call it Ativan and other medications like that, where they are knocking people out because when they're drugged up, sound asleep, passive, they're a whole lot easier for them to take care of. They don't make demands then.
And who's prescribing those drugs?
Well, of course, the prescription has to be signed by a doctor. But oftentimes the nursing home will initiate the request for the medication. They'll make a call to the doctor and say, Dr. So-and-so, Mr. Jones now is agitated, and can we get a prescription for blank? And they write up the order, and the doctor says, sure, go ahead and get a prescription for blank.
Without seeing the patient?
Well, without they're supposed to have seen the patient. Optimally, they've seen the patient. But that doesn't mean that that's what's happened.
Within a certain period of time? Or is it just, I saw him in February. Okay, I need this drug, Ativan, is that what it is?
Ativan.
Ativan. Okay, so his last checkup was in January, February. It's Halloween. He's having a bad spell today because he doesn't like Halloween for some reason. Mr. Jones is freaking out. And so you call Dr. Cohen and say, hey, I need some Ativan.
It would be unusual for that exam to have taken place, the last exam to have taken place more than 3 months before the request for the prescription, because usually a doctor is going to see him every 2 to 3 months. Some doctors are more frequently visiting their patients, and they'll see him once a month. Frankly, when we're dealing with doctors who are seeing patients once a month, they're not really going to be in lawsuits because they're getting better care, more frequent care. So although it's possible in theory that a doctor wouldn't have seen a resident for some time, it's not what I've seen in practice.
312-521-8600 is the phone and text line. Go to WGN.FM, download a podcast of Raising the Bar. You could also go to ConicekDillonLaw.com, ConicekDillonLaw.com. I know it's tricky. That's why I spelled it twice. KONICEK Dillon, DILLON, Law, LAW.com. And you could give the law offices of Conisek and Dillon a call, 630-262-9655, if you think that your loved one has been neglected or abused at a nursing home. I sound like one of your commercials, Tom. Every time it comes on now, I'm like, I know that guy. It's Tom Dillon. 312-521-8600. We're going to take a quick break here. You got to pay some bills, do some things. 312-521-8600, 312-521-8600. Phone and text line. We'll be back after these messages.
Now back to Raising the Bar.
312-521-8600 is the phone and the text line. I'm David Hochberg, and with one of the partners at Conasec and Dillon, Tom Dillon. You hear Tom on the radio all the time in his commercials about nursing home abuse. And we're talking about nursing home abuse right now. We had a text come in, Tom, that I want to get to real quick. Phone lines are open, 312-521-8600. I've been accused of talking fast, Tom, and I always my retort is always listen faster. But 312-521.
Could you say that again? That was a little
listen faster. 312-521-8600 is the phone and text line. We try to simplify things as much as possible here at WGN Radio. So if you're listening on your phone, you could send a text to us at 312-521-8600 while you're listening to us as well. And if you don't feel comfortable talking, just shoot us a text. All right, so we want to talk about dignity and what that definition of dignity is. And you said you had a great story, a great example of another example of how somebody's dignity was abused. But we have a text here from the 815 area code. I looked into putting my grandma in a nursing home. They wanted us to sign a lot of documents. Is there anything we should be wary about signing? I wouldn't have even thought about that. You know, when doing a loan application, I own a mortgage company, you're signing 50, 60 pieces of paper, CYA on everybody. You know, and that's why I tell people everything you sign is covering somebody's rear end. Is it similar when you're checking, I would have to think, a loved one into a nursing facility?
It is. Just like you guys do in the loan business, they put the little stickies with the X's and tell you where to sign, and their hope is that you don't actually read anything. Not that you don't want
right.
people to read, but...
I don't, because it's exhausting, but go ahead.
Yeah. In the nursing home setting, the big trend is for nursing home chains to have people agree going into the nursing home that if something goes wrong, if they have a problem, they will not file a lawsuit in court, but instead they'll agree to go to arbitration.
Hmm. And that's one of the forms you're signing in that boilerplate.
For many of the nursing home chains, it is. And that's something you do not want to sign because arbitration is not urged by all of these facilities and sought by them because it works for the person who got hurt. They all want it because it works best for them.
Would you recommend maybe that somebody calls you? Do you do this? How about this question? Do you do this? If somebody like this 815 was thinking about checking their grandmother into a facility, gets the Yellow Pages, and the people that remember Yellow Pages know what I'm talking about, a 4-inch packet of documents, would it be wise to hire an attorney to review? Much like somebody when they close a loan at purchase a home, they have a real estate attorney there to review all the documents, and this is what this is, sign here, and here's your escrow disclaimer, sign here. Is it better to get the documents, call up your law office, if you even provide this, and sit with them and explain, these are the documents you're signing, here's the good, the bad, and the ugly. Is that a service that you provide?
It is, and if people have that luxury, we can do it for them, but unfortunately, most people don't have that luxury because a residency in a nursing home is not something that they were able to plan for. It's something that came upon them because mom or dad got hurt, mom or dad had surgery, they need to go to a nursing home for rehabilitation and some post-acute care, and they don't have the option of saying, okay, I'm going to take all these documents now and go visit with my attorney. So they have to be aware of it themselves, and they have to know to look out for an arbitration clause and then cross it out. Cross it out.
Where would that be? Where would the arbitration clause be?
It's in what's called the admission agreement.
Admission agreement.
Admission agreement,
and
right.
It says on the top, it says admission agreement.
Right. They may have slightly different words, but admission agreement is what it's typically called. It's what it's called in the industry. And what you want to do is that's usually about a 16 to 20 page document, and some of the admission agreement contains legalese. And by legalese, I don't mean terms that have absolutely no meaning. I mean terms that the law requires them to put in.
Okay.
And those terms include all the rights that we're talking about today. You have this Bill of Rights. You get to, that kind of notice when you're going into a nursing home. But the most sinister thing is definitely the arbitration clause. You want to cross that out because if something goes wrong, mm-hmm. you just don't want to have to go to arbitration because nothing good comes from arbitration. A jury is going to be a better option to persuade the nursing home to change the way it does business and to do things better. Any nursing home that's saying, we want to go to arbitration, is a nursing home that's experienced in problems and experienced in people trying to get problems fixed.
And that document's called, one more time, the admission agreement. Okay, so when and how many documents typically do people sign when checking somebody into? I've never checked somebody into a nursing home or a post-op facility. So how many documents are there typically to sign?
You'll get a packet, and a lot of them deal with medical issues. A lot of them deal with legal issues. Legal issues, what are they going to do for mom or dad? Who's going to pay for it? Who's responsible if mom or dad die, if mom or dad aren't going to pay for it? Those are legal things that, you know, they vary by family, by resident. So mm-hmm. we can't really give a here's a general rule for people to follow. The other things that people are going to sign, if they don't already have one, they're going to want to sign a healthcare power of attorney, which the nursing homes will insist on. Mm-hmm. It's a very good idea to have a property power of attorney, which most nursing homes do not provide. But those are easy to obtain. You can get the Illinois form online, or people can contact us, and we can send them.
You'll
the
do
Illinois
that
form.
For them.
There's a new Illinois form that started last year.
You don't have to go to a real estate attorney. You can handle that for them.
We can email it
to
you. It's very, very easy, that's free. Of course, we just send it out so people have the form. Mm-hmm. But one of the more important things that people will want to talk about are the advanced directives. What is going to happen to mom or dad in the event of some
event,
illness, heart attack, stroke,
right.
some disabling event. The primary one is a DNR, do not resuscitate order, and nursing homes will want to have a DNR one way or the other. Either it's a do not resuscitate or it's a full code. Are they going to take all the heroic measures and keep the person alive? Or are they going to say, no, this person's a DNR, we can't do anything, we have to just let this person's life take its natural course.
And it's not the Department of National Resources. It's do not resuscitate.
Correct.
Okay.
To help people remember, DNR, that helps.
Right.
You know, the Department of National Resources, that's exactly how
right.
how I thought of it when my dad was asking me what a DNR is because he was a deer hunter, so he wanted to know.
Exactly. So you get the admission agreement. And would it be off the wall for somebody that's signed? Is there somebody there explaining? Listen, I give somebody 50 loan documents to sign. If somebody wants me to answer questions, I could explain every one of the loan documents. Okay, this is what this means. This is what this means. Okay, blah, blah, blah. A lot of it is just these are your costs, you know, ranges of costs. But is there somebody there to go through page by page, or are they just put in a side room and say, sign this?
Well, it's a little bit of both. The person who's taking the resident or the family through the paperwork is somebody who works for the nursing home.
Okay.
Oftentimes it's a social worker. Sometimes it's someone who works in the business office. Maybe it's a business manager or a billing manager. It's not someone who's looking out for the best interests of the resident. However, it tends to be someone who puts on the cheery, smiley face, and everything's good, and everything's golden, and there's
How
not going to be any problems. And
want something to drink? Hey, no. Can I get you a coffee? Yeah, all right,
So you get somebody who's just putting on a shiny face, but mm-hmm. they're having you sign documents that could have serious legal consequences, and it's important to keep in mind that the person who's doing that is not looking out for your best interest. They're looking out for their employer's best interest.
They work for the nursing home.
That's right. They're looking out for the person who signs their checks.
So 312-521-8600, phone and text line. Great text, 815. Keep them coming. If you have any more, if you have any additional questions, keep them coming. Keep texting. This is how we learn. This is how we teach. This is how we educate ourselves and our listeners. So, okay, I asked the person, where is the litigation clause or the arbitration clause. If I ask that, they've got to point it out.
They do.
Okay. Do I have a legal right if I'm this 815 to cross it out?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I could strike anything in there I don't like.
Absolutely. And the nursing home can say, well, I'm sorry, we won't accept your mom or dad if you don't have this arbitration agreement in our contract with us. They can say that. And then you say, okay, then we'll go to another nursing home.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so you
It's a contract. It's a contract. So there can be negotiations. Just because they hand you a printed form...
Doesn't mean you have to sign it.
Doesn't mean you have to agree to everything that's in there.
Okay.
And so cross it out and say, well, you know what? You know, if my mom is paying, she's paying $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 a month.
Sure.
If Medicaid is paying...
And that's what it costs. I mean, folks, that's what it costs.
A month.
A month. I just talked to a lady... Her mother's 90 years young, God bless her, lives in a $400,000 house, $300,000 house yesterday, $6,000 a month. Mom doesn't want to leave. Mom's in good health, doesn't want to leave the house. I said, let me guess, $6,000 a month to take care of your mom, $5,800, she said. Okay.
And that's one that's not very expensive. The most expensive in the Chicago area now have top $10,000 a month.
Wow.
So when you think about that, it's $120,000 a year. How many people in Illinois make $120,000 a year?
None.
That's double.
It's a lot of money.
Double the per capita income in this state.
So admission agreement and the striking of the clause, you want the arbitration clause. You want to ask for, can you please show me where the arbitration clause is? And you get out your pen, black, blue, yellow, whatever, and you cross it out, put a big X, and you make a nice little snowflake out of it, and you just move on to something else. Initial it?
Cross it out, initial every page.
Okay.
Ask for a copy of it.
Have the other side initial it?
Absolutely.
Where you crossed out.
Right.
To make sure that they know you crossed it out.
Right.
Right, attorney?
And that they're acknowledging it.
Okay. And then if something, God forbid, happens, you could go to court instead of through an arbitration. Arbitration is still on the board, or did you wipe that out altogether because you eliminated that?
Well, you could always agree to go to arbitration later if a problem arose.
Okay.
Okay? That's something that you can agree to later. But if the case is going to go to arbitration, it should be because everybody agreed after a problem happened and they say, you know what, the best way to resolve this is by arbitration.
All right, let's talk about your dignity story. During the break, you're like, you know what, I forgot to mention something during the first half of the show and you wanted to bring it up. I want to make sure we get it in the last 15 minutes of the show. You're listening to Raising the Bar, sponsored by and brought to you by the law offices of Conasec Dillon. You could go to their website, Conasec Dillon. It's Conasec and Dillon, I should say. You could go to their website, ConasecDillonLaw.com. That's KONISECKDILLON LAW.com. You could give them a call at 630-262-9655, 630-262-9655. You don't feel comfortable talking on air or texting or sending us any type of correspondence during the show. You could also send an email to raisingthebar@wgnradio.com, raisingthebar@wgnradio.com. You could download a podcast of this show and previous shows by going to wgn.fm, typing in Raising the Bar or Conasec and Dillon, and it'll take you right to the web page. So let's go through that story of abuse of dignity like you wanted to mention during the first half that we didn't get to.
You had asked me what the legal definition of dignity was, and my response was that the legal definition is not really all that meaningful, but people can get it with real-life examples of things that would violate someone's dignity. There's a particular nursing home chain in northern Illinois, and they know who they are. I won't mention them.
What are their initials?
I can't do that. That'd be too obvious.
Thought I'd slip it in there.
Anyway. I don't know if I should give you any suggestion.
Do
you want the initials of the shell that they use?
No.
The different corporate shells?
What street are they on?
So what this particular chain does is they'll hire CNAs to do showers for residents.
CNAs, one more time, during the second half of the show, we talked about the first half, is?
A certified nurse assistant.
Okay.
Some are men.
Are they licensed by the state, CNAs?
They're not. They're regulated by the state, but they're not licensed like a nurse's license.
Any type of training to be a CNA?
You have to have that's what the certified part means. You do have to have a certification that you've gone through a training program, learned core principles, core skills for transfers, for meal assistance, for activities of daily living. So they do actually have certification. And what you'll find a lot of times in nursing homes, by the way, just as an aside, is the CNAs, most of them are really caring people, and they're doing it not because they're getting rich, because they're not. They're doing it because they want to take care of people.
Right.
And if you find a CNA who's a caring CNA, boy, that person will take loving care of your mom or dad, and they're wonderful. Unfortunately, if you find one who's there just because it's the only job they could get, they don't really care as much. So just an example, and this particular nursing home chain knows who it is because I've squawked at them about it many times. We have residents in the nursing home who go from early 60s all the way to 100 and above.
Wow.
And more of them are women than men.
Mm-hmm.
And yet these nursing homes have male shower aides who bathe 70,
older women.
80, 90-year-old women.
Right.
And I have so many problems with that. I represented a family, devoutly religious people, and they asked this nursing home chain, could we have a woman instead of a young man?
Right.
No. They were told no. And it didn't matter that this 83-year-old woman was terribly shy, was a very modest, humble woman, and it was really upsetting to her that they had a 20-year-old young man showering her.
Who might have been the nicest guy in the world.
Could have been.
And nothing against the 20-year-old young man, but if my 83-year-old grandmother is going to be naked to get washed down because she has to, you know, for health reasons and sanitary reasons, I wouldn't want a 20. I wouldn't want any man, any age, touching my 83-year-old grandmother, unless it's my grandfather. Okay, it's just not right.
That's right, and that's why I said, you know, dignity. Sometimes you say, if I want to look at the situation they're in, would I swap? Would I want to be in the position they're in? If the answer is no, there's usually going to be a dignity problem there.
Interesting, I would have never thought about that, unless you have somebody, a loved one or a relative or somebody in a nursing home. Who the heck thinks of these things? I never even would have thought of that until you brought it up. So 815, might want to ask the ratio of male to female CNAs, and you know maybe that's a major factor that should be thrown into the mix there when choosing where to go.
Generally speaking, ask a lot of questions, not just of the people who work there, but of other residents.
What other questions?
Of other family members. How do they treat you? What don't you like? What do you like most? What bothers you the most? Are there any caregivers here who are really particularly nice? Are there any that you cringe when they walk in your room? Ask mom or dad. If they can't really ask the questions themselves, ask them, mom, dad, is there something you're worried about? Is there something you particularly want or don't want in a nursing home? And if they say, you know what, I really don't want to have a shower aide from the opposite sex, ask the people at the nursing home, ask the administrator, and have them put it in writing.
Okay.
We will have showers done by a
in the admission agreement.
Well, they probably won't put it in the admission agreement, but they may agree to put it in writing in an email or something.
Okay, so what other things? So, you know, you just went through like 10 or 15 things that you should ask your parents and ask other residents. But what should you be asking the admission officer?
What you want to ask the admission officer is if mom or dad doesn't survive through a month or 2 months or 3 months or 6 months, whatever it is, what are you going to do at the end of that time? If mom passes away, who are you going to chase down for money? Are you going to chase anyone down for money? Or if mom has a stroke and has to go to the hospital, will you hold her bed for her?
Mm.
Okay. That type of information is usually set out in the admission agreement, whether they will have a bed hold. And that's a supply and demand issue many times. If they liked mom or dad and liked the revenue source, maybe they're willing to hold the bed a little longer. If they don't like the resident, that bed's not going to be held.
Is there a law how long they have to hold the bed if somebody was transported to the hospital?
There isn't. There isn't for that. And that's for a very good reason, because they can't handcuff the nursing home in terms of how they operate that part of their day-to-day business.
So
if somebody needs the bed, they're going to get them in the bed. But a good nursing home for a good resident will accommodate any way they can to get the person back in.
So somebody could be living in a nursing facility or a residential facility for 15 years, has something, you know, stroke, heart, whatever, okay, has to go to the hospital for a week, a hardcore hospital, to get treatment done. They're in there a week. They could call up and say, okay, we want to come back, and the bed's gone.
In theory.
In theory. Holy smokes.
Yeah. So you want to ask the bed hold, and you know, most nursing homes are not 100% full all the time.
Wow.
So that problem is uncommon, at least in my experience, it's uncommon.
Wow.
But the longest I think I've had was a resident who was in the nursing home for about 10 years, which you know is a very, very long,
time
to be in someone else's care. But when you have somebody who's got a strong heart, who doesn't have any chronic illnesses, but has dementia or you know, Alzheimer's specifically, they might live a long time, and then they're dependent on other people for care that whole time.
All right, give us a thought of the week here on a Friday of Halloween before we take off. We got a minute left, so what do you want to leave people with?
If you have a loved one in a nursing home, go visit, say hello, go with eyes and ears open, pay attention to what's happening in the room, in the hallway, in the dining room, in the common areas. Pay attention to how staff is taking care of them, how staff responds to other people, and ask questions. ask questions, and make sure that staff knows who you are and knows that you're there. And when you are there, take notes. Don't let their word be the only version of the story if something goes wrong.
You ask questions of the resident or ask questions of the staff?
Of the staff if you need to, but you know, if you see a resident in the hallway, if they look like they're upset, ask, are you okay? Is there anything I can do to help you?
Uh-huh.
Maybe you'll get an answer. Maybe they're waiting for something that they haven't been able to say to somebody yet.
Interesting. That's because under the law, you have a responsibility to look out for other people in nursing homes. Your eyes and ears, your nose is another sensory factor when it comes to taking care of the elderly. Because if it smells like an outhouse in there, you got some problems.
And some do. Believe me, some do. I've gone into nursing homes where if someone took me in blindfolded and said, just smell and listen and tell us where you are, if you guessed circus,
yeah,
it would have been a reasonable guess.
Or the ape house at Lincoln Park Zoo.
You just hear, you know, all kinds of things that are very sad and tragic, and unfortunately you smell like an outhouse.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming down on Halloween there, Mr. Dillon. And you've been listening to Raising the Bar, brought to you by the law offices of Conasec and Dillon. They're located at 21 West State Street in beautiful Geneva, Illinois. If you want to reach them by giving them a call, you could call them at 630-262-9655, 630-262-9655. You could go to WGN.FM to download a podcast of this show and previous shows. WGN.FM, type in Raising the Bar or type in Conasec and Dillon. That's KONISECKDILLON. You could also visit their website, ConasecDillonLaw.com. That's KONISECKDILLON Law.com. Thanks, Tom. Great show.
Thanks, David.